From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. I believe this is officially our first Strange News segment we are recording in 2021. So congratulations, conspiracy realist. You are embarking on this journey together with us. We have so much news for you. And we've been doing something that I think is pretty neat over the past few weeks with Strange News. We've been finding at least one news story that is not a terrible indicator of a dystopian hellscape. We found like at least one every time.
I think it's important. You got to maintain balance in the force and all that. I mean, if not for the listeners, for our own sanity, I would say.
Oh, hold on, Ben. I'm just looking through those stories that we've done recently. Are you sure? A lot of this looks like hellscape to me.
Well, we found some silver linings, to use the cliche.
Maybe. Well, I was gone for the last 2 weeks, so I can't speak to that. I can't wait to check it out, though, and be completely bummed out.
Well, Noel, you missed super gonorrhea, I think, didn't you?
Miss is a strong word.
I've always missed super gonorrhea.
I hope so. Yeah. Hope so. Well, welcome back, Noel. We hope you had great adventures. We hope everybody hearing this had some semblance of a break. As we discussed earlier, the calendar as it stands is a relatively arbitrary thing. But, you know, well, let's take what wins we can get. 2020 was one of those kind of what's it they say in aviation? Any landing you can walk away from is still
any,
a landing.
Any port in a storm. That's more for the nautical version. And I don't even know if those really are one to one, but they're close.
Yeah. Yeah. And so today we bring you a legal story, a story of burgeoning war, a story of technological ingenuity that could save millions of people, literally. Mm-hmm. Those aren't all the same story. Those are three different stories. We'll explore them now. This is something, let's start with this one. This is something that's on everybody's minds. We were talking a little bit about it in the early hours of Monday, January 4th, as we record this. Julian Assange, you guys remember a while back we did an update on Assange, who had been held at the notorious, the infamous Belmarsh prison for a long time. We saw photographs of the man who was he looked worse for wear. There were concerns about his mental condition, and we were speculating a little bit, as you always have to do. We're speculating whether this was being played up as a way of arguing against his extradition to the United States, where he is wanted on 17 espionage charges and one charge of what's called computer misuse. And this is still part of the U.S. attempts to prosecute him for his work with WikiLeaks. 10 years ago now. Matt, that's so crazy. It's 10 years ago now. He leaked military and diplomatic documents, right? And the argument on the U.S. side is that in doing so, he placed the lives of civilians and service members in immediate danger. These are charges, of course, that Assange categorically denies. And the argument on his legal team's side is that they are being punished, and Assange is being punished in particular for revealing U.S. violations of international and even domestic law. So you can learn more about the overall case for and against Assange from our previous episodes. You can learn the recent news from our update, which wasn't too long ago. But just today, as we were heading into the studio, it became official. A British judge has blocked Julian Assange's extradition to the U.S. He is currently not going to the United States. Asterisk, 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 so much fine print as we caveat this. Folks, peek behind the conspiracy curtain. As we record this, we're recording an episode that you are going to hear on January 11th. Right now, the U.S. authorities have a right to appeal this denial of extradition. They have 15 days to make a case. And of course, we imagine they will make a case, because when we talk about Assange, when we talk about WikiLeaks, I think it's fair to say, and stop me if I sound too cynical here, Matt, Noel, Doc, I think it's fair to say it doesn't matter which political party is in office. I think they'll still try to extradite him. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what he represents, I think, is a what either side would maybe consider a dangerous precedent for, I mean, it is free speech, but it's also leaking classified documents. So it's sort of like a question of different points of the law. Is it him exercising civil liberties as a member of the press, or is it him breaking the law and putting people's lives in danger or political careers, which I think they're probably more concerned about?
Mm-hmm.
I think they view it as an affront to the entire system. The acts that Julian Assange allegedly did, at least what they say he did in working with Chelsea Manning. So they have to make some kind of serious example out of him so that anyone else attempting to do it knows, no matter how long it takes, the United States will extradite you back to the U.S., put you in prison, and you will not enjoy it. It will be very, very bad for you.
But that's interesting when we look at, I don't want to take us too far off topic, but it's interesting when we look at the recent case of Jonathan Pollard, the spy for the state of Israel, who was convicted, served his sentence in the U.S., and then was given a hero's welcome in that country where he now resides. That was a case of someone being prosecuted for their crime, but they weren't. I don't know. It seems like the U.S. government went a little easier on that person, but maybe it's because they already had them in custody and in country. There does seem to be an aim to make an example of Assange, especially because they can't get Snowden unless he leaves Russia or is somehow betrayed by the Russian government.
Yeah, and just in response to that, I would say Pollard was a spy for Israel, right? And working within the United States. Am I getting that correct?
That is correct.
So this is just my take personally, and I may be completely incorrect, anyone out there listening, but I think the special relationship that the United States and Israel have, I think there's something to that relationship where he wasn't pursued as hard as Assange is, because if you think about Assange, he wasn't working for, you know, as a spy for another country. He was working essentially as a journalist for the public. And I don't mean to say that the United States military and intelligence agencies see the public as the enemy, but it's much more dangerous, I think, for the public a lot of times to know about some of this stuff, because it makes it way more difficult to get the money that is needed, right? Because you have to worry about elected officials to then, you know, pass the bills and the funding and all of that, rather than with another country where you may be at odds, but you're still working together, even if, you know, say Israel, it did get a lot of intelligence out of this, the spy work that he did.
Well, it also removes that whole diplomatic layer. I mean, there's still obviously diplomacy involved in extradition and, like, you know, demanding they extradite him to so we can have our way with him or whatever and make an example of him. But it does remove that whole layer of, like, working with another country in that to that level. It's funny that you say that, though. To me, it seems like the situation you're describing with the spy feels worse and more egregious than this.
If it was a spy for a country that we weren't deeply aligned with, I think it would be.
Right, yeah, but like, isn't Iran, that sort of like, we're like friends. Why you got spying on us? I thought we were friends. I thought we were cool.
Mm.
But that happens all the time. We've all talked about this before, but, you know, friendly countries spy on each other all the time. And,
sure.
And it's always just to make sure you have tabs on what everybody else is doing who's hanging out with you. Fair. Sometimes even harder than your adversaries.
So let's call them frenemies.
Frenemies, indeed. Yeah. So maybe the issue here is that this is just really testing the idea of freedom of the press, like really testing it in a way that maybe we don't want to see it pass that test, like because it opens up all of these doors. You know, if he's allowed to do this and run roughshod over all of these rules governing, you know, diplomatic exchanges and cables and whatever classified stuff, then it opens up the doors for anybody to do it and claim freedom of the press.
Well, this is an interesting thing. So the entire reason I bring up Pollard is not just because he was in the news recently. He was sentenced to life imprisonment. He was released on November 20th, 2015. And eventually his parole terms expired in November of last year. So he was free. He served his time, but he was sentenced to life imprisonment under what's called the Espionage Act. And that is the legal standing the U.S. is taking for their attempted prosecution of Julian Assange, specifically him working with former defense analyst Chelsea Manning. They say that together, he and Manning broke the Espionage Act. So I would be interested to see what sort of sentencing they arrive at with someone who is not ostensibly, to your point, Matt, a servant of a state actor. Now, the strangest part about this story, the part I don't want anybody to miss, is the logic that the United Kingdom's court systems used in denying extradition. They did not have any beef with the claim that this was a violation of U.S. law.
That's right.
They didn't even care about that part, really. The judge, Vanessa Barrister, said, quote, "I find that the mental condition of Mr. Assange is such that it would be oppressive to extradite him to the United States of America because he is a suicide risk. And I have a couple of red strings to connect to some, you know, thumbtacks here, you guys. This is happening in the wake of the death of Jeffrey Epstein. I think at the very least, a sizable part of the global population does not believe that man took his own life.
Right.
Or they believe he was allowed to do so at the very least. So the whole reason the UK isn't sending this guy to a U.S. prison right now is not because they think the case doesn't have merit. They think that something bad will happen to him. They think his chances of never seeing a day in a U.S. court are very, very high. And you know what? We try to keep our opinions out of this, or at least be very transparent when we're talking about our opinions. It is my opinion that they are absolutely right. This guy would not make it to court.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And it is interesting. Like you said, they basically ruled in favor of the U.S. on every other point. There was a statement from the lawyers on the U.S. side saying, "While we're extremely disappointed in the court's ultimate decision, we're gratified that the United States prevailed on every point of law raised. In particular, the court rejected all of Mr. Assange's arguments regarding political motivation, political offense, fair trial, and freedom of speech."
You know, just to put in there, the judge also mentioned something about Julian Assange being existing somewhere within the autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. And her quote was something like single-minded determination, essentially, to take his own life. And that somehow the prison system would aid and abet that determination that he has. Yeah. It's pretty crazy that that's the way it has to me. Again, my opinion personally, it is a way to discuss these kinds of things in the open, like the, you know, the Epstein situation where you put him in this place and perhaps his own determination would allow that to occur because of the situation at the prison. It has nothing to do with the guards or anyone allowing anything. It's just, it was what would happen.
Something.
What indication do we have of his intent to do himself harm?
His public statements, the statements of his fiance, the statements of people who have observed him or interviewed him. It's pretty solid.
Circumstantial. Okay. You think it's solid.
It's pretty solid. I mean, at least the statements are solid. Now, whether or not that is a sincere motivation is a little more difficult to guess. But right now, the worry of self-harm and suicide, I think has much more sand to it than the legal charges against him in the U.S. That conspiracy to commit computer hacking comes from like a line about intent in a chat conversation with Manning, wherein Assange says he's going to ask somebody else to try to guess a password for an encrypted file. And he never actually, it's not proven that he did it. It's just proven that he, in this comment, said, I'll try to get someone to figure this out for me. So it does feel like this is more, I mean, keep in mind, this is an Australian national, right? Being extradited from the UK to the US. Yes, they're cozy as kittens because they're part of Five Eyes, but I don't know. I think that point to journalism is really important here. And also, Matt, one thing you said about being neuroatypical, there's a very similar case here with Gary McKinnon. You remember that guy?
I do.
Hacked into some of Uncle Sam's digital shoeboxes, claims he found evidence of extraterrestrials, UFOs. He was also not extradited due to similar concerns about his treatment in the U.S. prison system.
Yeah, man. I don't want to freak anybody out. Probably it was nothing. I have this new chair that I got as a gift for the holidays this year. It's just an office chair. Something in this room just moved my chair, like physically pushed my chair. There's nobody in this room, you guys.
It was me with my mind, dude.
I'm not joking. I know I'm saying it out of nowhere, but that literally just happened.
Oh my God.
Just take that with you.
Keep us on tabs here, Matt. Let us know if you have any unusual movements. I've been having a lot of TKPK dreams recently, too, so I'm
really
on board with this. Yeah, just chime in as we
dude,
continue.
I'm not kidding. Same.
It begins. Dun, 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 dun,
guys, I don't
dun,
know what dun, that dun, is. Dun, dun, what is TKPK?
Telekinesis and then psychokinesis. Oh. Kind of two terms for the same thing.
I've never heard it put that way. Interesting. So you've had predictive dreams, Ben? Is that what you're saying? Like dreams that come to pass?
Oh, that's a sensitive one. dreams where I'm moving stuff with my mind.
It sounds
like Matt's having the same, huh? So
probably all those Mandalorian episodes you guys have been watching.
Right. Maybe that's it. But we are going to pause here because that's the news as it stands now. Of course, the U.S. and Uncle Sam are going to attempt to appeal this. They have to. We predict that a change in administration in the U.S. is not going to change the course of this prosecution for the reasons we've outlined.
Oh, there was one last thing, a heartfelt plea from Assange's partner, Stella Morris. Just very quotable. It's the only reason I want to say it. She says, Mr. President, tear down these prison walls. Let our little boys have their father, because they have two little boys together. But it's just so quotable. It's almost like, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I'm sure it's modeled to be that way.
I'm sure it is.
You want to appeal to emotion, because this is taking place in two courts.
And I believe it's 18 months he's been incarcerated. So it's not like, you know, he's gotten off scot-free. But he did. Wasn't it he who had some very unusual special treatment in his incarceration? Was that?
It depends on whether you're talking about when he was in the embassy.
That was what it was.
Yeah. So, he wasn't incarcerated. Stuck there.
He was kicking it.
That's what I mean. He was in basically like a dorms kind of situation almost.
He was tough to get along with. He was being kind of a bad housemate, according to the reports. But then again, it's really tough to parse some of that because there was so much propaganda going into this on either side. But we are going to keep you updated. We're going to keep ourselves updated on the extradition hearings. And I would also say that if extradition is denied, it's still not a done deal. I don't want to be alarmist, but I will say that accidents happen, and we seem to be seeing a lot of international accidents occurring in the past year, in the past few months, probably in 2021 too. We'll see more. And with that, we're going to pause for a word from our sponsor, and we'll return with more strange news.
And we are back. Now we are taking a bit of a trip over to the Middle East to hang out in Iran a little bit. It's a country that has for a long time been beset by adversaries, to many, rightly so, and to many others. It is the last bastion that's set to fight against the powers of the West. It's a very interesting place. The history of Iran is fascinating, and the amount of learning and education that came out of that country historically is amazing. Again, Ben and Nolan and I have talked about the history of Iran for a long time, and right now the tensions between Iran and the West are heating up, and they have been for a little while. We talked about it briefly a little bit at the end of last year, I believe in December, maybe November, but right now Iran has gone back to enriching its uranium supplies, and as of Monday, I believe it was being reported that officially Iran has captured a South Korean flagged oil tanker right near the Strait of Hormuz, a very important strategic part of the world that, again, we've discussed before on this show. And these are two pretty big things. Ben, and I'm going to look to you to kind of explore some of this with me, but I know one of the largest dangers, at least that Western powers talk about when it comes to Iran, is their potential to enrich uranium to create nuclear weapons. And a lot of times the rhetoric that's put forth is that a country like Iran, I'm doing quotations, armed with nuclear weaponry is probably one of the most dangerous things that could exist on the planet. Now, you can argue that point on either side. There's certainly a history of dangerous activity, and nuclear weapons are certainly horrifying and have potential to, you know, erase humanity eventually after they're used. The other thing here that's going on is that the United States is posturing very, very hard, specifically the United States, but as well as other what we would call Western countries. The United States, in response, has decided to leave an aircraft carrier that has been hanging out over there in the Middle East for a long time. I think it's been since April, maybe, of last year, it's been deployed, the USS Nimitz. It's been deployed in the area for a long time, and the decision was just made to keep it stationed where it has been stationed for a while as a maneuver to, again, apply pressure to Iran as they're making these other moves, enriching uranium, taking an oil tanker captive, essentially. There are, of course, other things that are occurring that are not being reported in the news because they're probably being monitored very closely through intelligence agencies on both sides. But these are some of the most public-facing events that have occurred with regards to Iran and Western powers recently.
And their position has always been that they were doing this, you know, for energy purposes, correct? Or that this was all like meant to be peaceful and not necessarily, you know, an act of aggression. And I know that Trump withdrew from an agreement with Iran recently over kind of them sort of not following the letter of it, or at the very least the spirit of it. And he just kind of like threw his hands up and exited the agreement. So this is further escalation and very clearly not just peaceful, energy level enrichment of uranium.
Well, it's dual use. That's the problem. So it's like, imagine that every microwave oven you create is also a bomb. And the only difference is how far you turn the switch. That's a poor analogy, but it's on the money there. So
yeah, in this case, just how long you leave it in the centrifuges.
Right.
Well, that's what I mean, though. That 20% number would be weapons grade, and you wouldn't have to go up. No? Is that not true?
I think you're looking more in the 90s, right, when you're talking about weapons grade uranium.
Well, no, I'm just talking about, like, that 20% number is relevant. It keeps coming up. Like, there, you know, 20% enriched uranium is able to be used to create nuclear weapons. Isn't that correct? Is it the same level of enrichment that would be used to create nuclear energy?
I You know, I'm not a nuclear expert. I'm not an atomic scientist. However, that's not even a thing. But I know weapons grade level is 90% enrichment.
Yeah, for sure. 80 to 90%.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The terms of the 2015 deal restrict Iranian enrichment to 4.5%.
Got it.
But it's really a question of how long one lets the centrifuges spin, which is why it's so dangerous. You don't need other additional equipment. You just need more time. Mm-hmm. And you just change the recipe, but you don't change the kitchen, if that makes sense.
There you go.
Yep. So I want to step back through some very important points you brought up here, Matt. First, the problem with the Nimitz staying in the Middle East is that in a time and a region with great instability, this signals one of the worst things you can signal internationally, which is intense domestic division.
Yeah.
So from what we understand, there's deep internal domestic division in the U.S. The military ordered the Nimitz away, but political forces in the U.S. ordered it to return due to, well, speculative concerns that would make the current U.S. administration appear weak. That's a quote. I'm not saying that's right. I'm saying that's their opinion. That's their logic and their calculus. So look at it from the outside. Look at it as a foreign observer. And we have, you know, we have a lot of conspiracy realists listening to this show in the Middle East. We have a lot of people who are conspiracy realists in the Persian Gulf. We have a lot of Iranians who listen to this show. And imagine how insane it must seem to be dealing with this this country that has been historically bellicose to you and quite aggressive. Yeah. And I'm not saying there are any good guys in this scenario, by the way, but imagine you went out on a limb, either sincerely or disingenuously, and said, okay, we'll do this trade deal, just get these sanctions off our back because they're crippling innocent people, which is what sanctions often do as a side effect. And then all of a sudden, just a few years later, the people you went against everything you understood about history and trusted turned out not to be trustworthy again. From their perspective, yeah, that is what's happening. And so this ship appears to leave, this aircraft carrier, which is a country destroyer, by the way. These are big bruisers. This thing, one of what, 11 that the U.S. has, we have the most in the world. It seems like it's leaving, and then it pulls a U-turn. And it's a very big, wide U, because these are very big, wide vessels. And then it just heads back to your neighborhood. Wouldn't you freak out a little? I feel like that's understandable. Yeah. I would freak a little.
Really quickly, sorry for my own benefit here. I was just looking it up, and 20% enrichment is considered weapons usable uranium, and it would require a ton of it, and it would be kind of unwieldy for designing a nuclear weapon. It would need to be much more highly enriched to be able to design like a, you know, casing that would be more easily deployable. But it is like the kind of the minimum for being able to have this material be used for nuclear weapons. So I guess that's why that's the cutoff.
Well, you can make a hell of a dirty bomb out of it.
Also true.
Okay. Well,
I kind of want to jump off what you're saying here, guys. Remember also what happened within a year's time. The United States assassinated Soleimani. Oh, yeah. Soleimani. Mm-hmm. And also, we just did an episode about the Iranian scientist who was assassinated.
Right.
Who was one of the pioneers of the nuclear program there. There have been a lot of actions taking place where it feels like the walls are closing in a little bit. And then, you know, add on top of it, pulling out of the deal that was struck there. It's just things don't look good, in my opinion, for 2021 when it comes to Iran and the United States.
I agree with you, Matt. If this were a weather forecast, the weather forecast would be chance of storms in the worst possible way. But I do want to do a clarification and question for the conspiracy realists in the crowd here. So from my understanding, I'm just remembering back to grad school stuff. From my understanding, 20% enrichment is not practical. I think it's charitable to call it weapons usable. Mm-hmm. The big issue is that the most difficult part of the enrichment process, and again, if I understand this correctly, if my CIA spook professors were telling the truth, then the enrichment process is most difficult from 0 to 20%. And once you get to that 20% number where you need it to get to something you can make a warhead or a bomb from at 90%, that's much easier, much, much easier.
Just leave it in the oven, like you said, right?
Right. So from like step one is 0, step two is 20. It's very difficult to get to step two. But then step three is just like, I'm snapping my fingers. I don't know if that translates to audio, but that's why not for nothing, people who are historically antagonistic toward Iran are saying this is proof positive that they have decided to build weapons. I will also add, without making any unfounded accusations, I will also add that the historical precedent is this. When countries say they are researching nuclear weapons solely for peaceful purposes, they are lying. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're just lying to themselves, but they're lying because the technology is there. You know what I mean? You're not going to, if things get dicey on down the road, you're not going to say, well, we can totally do this, but we told ourselves we wouldn't. So gee willikers.
It's like Frodo swore he would never put on the ring, but he was compelled to do so because, you know, he was just drawn to it. I know that's a stupid analogy, but
it's a good one.
It's literally like once you get to the edge of that power, why not just take another step, you know, especially if it levels you up and puts you on a new playing field, you know, among people that mean to do you harm or at the very least undermine you as a sovereign nation.
And once you reach that point, once you reach the nuclear weapon finish line, then you enter a new realm. You enter a new level in the hierarchy of states and governments. Consider this, you know, North Korea doesn't even have a perfect nuclear weapon. They just have the nuclear capacity, and it changed the way they were negotiated with. South Africa walked away from its nuclear program, officially at least. Libya voluntarily stepped off the path to becoming a nuclear state. And, you know, for many dictators, what happened to Gaddafi after that is a lesson they have not and will not forget. So you can see why countries that have antagonistic relationships with their neighbors or with the world's superpowers feel like that risky finish line may not just be worth it, but it may be imperative to their continued existence. Again, we're not arguing that any of these things are right. We're just trying to explain the perspectives that the various players here have. If you're the government of Saudi Arabia, if you're the government of Israel, the last thing you want is a nuclear-capable Iran. Like, that is the last thing. You would be so against a nuclear Iran that you would choose almost any alternative. I was trying to think of something with some levity, but I don't know if it's really the time to have levity right now. Yeah. This is deep water.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is. And remember, Iran is under heavy sanctions. A ton of their assets are frozen across the world in different places, including in South Korea, which has something to do with why that tanker was taken into custody, let's say.
Did you see the claim that they were polluting the strait or the body of water there? And that's what they use as an excuse for having taken it?
Sure, but it's known that billions of dollars are frozen in Seoul right now. Mm-hmm. And there was going to be a representative from South Korea, like a diplomat who was supposedly traveling there to Iran to discuss those funds and what would happen to them. Who knows what's going to actually occur there. But all of this stuff is pretty terribly frightening. I have an ulterior motive, guys. One of the main reasons I wanted to bring this up was to mention the Nimitz. Do you guys remember what the Nimitz was involved with?
I don't.
The USS Nimitz?
No. Mm-hmm.
You remember that UFO video, the Nimitz incident, where the fighter pilots saw the very strange thing?
Oh, yeah.
And it got leaked, and then, what is it, For the Stars Academy?
That's right, that was the big first one that everyone was, like, freaking out about.
Oh, Elizondo left To the Stars, by the way.
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, unrelated, but I like where you're going here with this, Matt. All right. Well, ulterior motive.
That's the one where there's audio from the pilots, right? There's audio from them saying, what the hell is that? Is that the one?
Yes. Yeah. I think this is the Tic Tac one. Correct me if I'm wrong, listeners out there. But this is the one where these pilots in 2004 were operating from the USS Nimitz when they encountered whatever that thing was in the air that they encountered. Just thought that was fascinating. And I ended up going down a pretty deep rabbit hole about just how many Navy encounters have come from being over just international waters in the ocean and fighter pilots. And oh my goodness.
Oh yeah.
Even stuff that isn't well documented, but just the stories that are out there and whether or not they're folklore or have some kind of true grit to them, it is fun to read and I would recommend it. So yeah, I just wanted to bring that up because I found it interesting. Of course, that is an aircraft carrier. It deploys jets all the time for all kinds of different maneuvers, you know, for training exercises as well as for operations. Only a small percentage of those encounter any kind of unidentified objects. I just think the Nimitz itself, I don't know, being there, for some reason, it puts weird pieces together for me personally.
We also have to consider the U.S. administration recently has had some troubling internal talks about escalating the situation into a hot war. I'll be honest, not because of what I would argue are sincere worries about the state of affairs in that part of the globe. I think they are meant to shore up domestic support here in the U.S., which is a terrible reason to start a war. You know what I mean? Because it's saying, it's just callous. There's also the idea, hey, Matt, maybe the entire reason that the West has been trying to turn Iran back into a puppet state for so long, because remember, it was until the 70s, thanks to U.S., it was. Maybe the reason they're trying to turn it back into a puppet state is to acquire some ancient thing hidden in the ground from the days of ancient Persia.
You guys, we got a voicemail from somebody that I don't think I can name right now, but from somebody who told us a story about the invasion of Iraq.
It was the
second time. It wasn't, you know, Desert Storm and the Iraqi war with, you know, with Kuwait and all of that situation. This was 2003 when the United States invaded Iraq for the second time. Sacking the museum, but also the story that this person told us was about a UFO crash in Iraq that was the reason we went back into Iraq, specifically for this one UFO, because allegedly the United States and other Western powers were nervous that extraterrestrial technology would get in the hands of an adversary. I love that stuff. I don't believe it necessarily, but I love it.
I could tag the necessarily on that. Yeah. I wrote a story that was entirely fictional in my head, but was that scenario. What if the ulterior motive for invading various Middle Eastern countries, Iraq in particular, was not some kind of geopolitical resource extraction control move? What if it was to retrieve some ancient artifact? And so I have a story about the museum of the sacking of the Iraq Museum before I realized it was real. And in the future, I do a little more research before I write fiction, but
I love the idea of a good sacking, you know? Well, how come we don't refer to people getting fired as being sacked like they do in the UK, or as, like, you know, conquering something, sacking it? It's such a classy term. Big fan.
I think they call it redundancy in the UK now.
Yeah, but if you get sacked, that means you got fired.
Yeah. No one ever, outside of rugby, no one ever gets sacked in a good way. Right?
There's a football thing too, right? Isn't that, don't they call it a sack? Quarterback sack? Maybe I made that up. I don't know. Matt, you really drew some interesting lines with this one that I was not expecting it to go there. Lots of food for thought and definitely a story to watch.
Well, if extraterrestrials were real, were visiting our planet for some reason, wouldn't it make sense if they were monitoring perhaps what would be considered World War III if it broke out? especially with nuclear weapons.
Especially
in the future.
If they need us to harvest us for something, or if they need, you know, not an entirely scorched planet so they can get some use out of it.
And for the record, since at least 2003, the government of Iran has consistently maintained that it has no intention to develop nuclear weapons. Just want to give their official statement there to be fair. I would love to hear from our listeners in Iran, in the region, want to hear your take on this. What do you think is going on? What is behind the move to increase the enrichment percentage?
Yeah. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.
And we're back with one last strange news story. And this is that silver lining story that Ben was talking about at the top of the show after a little bit of doom and gloom. It admittedly went to aliens for a bit, but then we pivoted back to scorched earth alien scenarios. But you know what two things people really like are? One is ice cream, and two is not being afflicted with the deadly virus. And it turns out there's some crossover between those two things. Are you guys aware of the novelty ice cream company Dippin' Dots?
Intimately.
Yes.
Intimately.
For sure.
Yeah. My personal favorite flavor of theirs is Banana Split. It turns out they actually have some pretty advanced technology that they use to create those Dippin' Dots, which if anyone isn't aware, they're basically like these little tiny spheres of ice cream. And they're different flavors. So like they're, you know, with the banana split one, I think it's like chocolate ones, little chocolate ice cream ones, and they're tiny. And then banana ones. And in between the two, you get banana split. And then you can mix and match your flavors. It's a whole thing. It's a delight. You see them at zoos and, you know, amusement parks and things. They have little trolleys that they serve them outside. But it turns out they have a really impressive production chain that they've figured out how to scale really, really well. And they deliver something in the neighborhood of 100 million servings of Dippin' Dots every year. And one thing they've managed to figure out how to do is regular freezers only keep things cold down to like 0 degrees, whereas the Dippin' Dots freezers and the manufacturing process keep them cold down to minus 49 degrees Fahrenheit. They have billed themselves as the ice cream of the future. Since 1988, when they were invented by a microbiologist. I didn't know any of this. But we know from everything that's been going on in the news with the vaccine, all good news, all very effective vaccines being created. There's sort of a space race going on between these different manufacturers, but it turns out we need them all because we got a lot of people to vaccinate. Well, the first one to market was from Pfizer BioNTech, and theirs has sort of a little bit of a Achilles heel. It needs to be stored at minus 94 degrees Fahrenheit, or else certain components in the vaccine can actually degrade and cause it to be ineffective. And it also has to be manufactured and then shipped all over the place, all over the country at the very least, and, you know, eventually all over the world.
Sorry, Noel, did you say minus 94 degrees?
Yeah. Needs to be stored at minus 94 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow. Okay.
And really quickly to double back, when I said that the Dippin' Dots machines or the Dippin' Dots freezers go down to minus 49, that is the minimum that the ice cream requires to stay in that beaded form. Their freezers actually go down much lower than that. I think they go down to like minus 100 or lower. And then again, that Pfizer vaccine has to be maintained at minus 94 degrees Fahrenheit or else it becomes useless. This is essentially a technology that is not available at scale in this way, because it's just no, aside from this ice cream company, there aren't very many products or pharmaceuticals that require storage at that level of cold. But it turns out that, you know, Dippin' Dots has been at this for a long time, and they've created this supply chain that they refer to as a cold chain infrastructure that standardizes, according to a really great article from Popular Science, standardizes every step of the process from manufacturing to packaging to shipment in this entire single long chain and distribution and all of that. So it turns out that they've got a lot to offer Pfizer in terms of like what they can learn and how they can maybe even lease or buy some of their freezers in order to like, you know, help spread the vaccine around. Because like I said, standard freezers bottom out at 0 degrees Fahrenheit, which isn't going to do the trick. So let's talk a little bit about how these lovely, delightful novelty ice cream dots are made. You might have had them at your local science center, perhaps an aquarium or of some sort. So Dippin' Dots get their little bead-like shape from this process called pelletizing. So the ingredients that go into making ice cream, which is milk and sugar and the flavorings and all that, they're mixed together and then dripped into this chamber and brought to minus 320 degrees Fahrenheit, and that's done with liquid nitrogen. So it's so cold that the droplets freeze in place immediately into these little beads. They kind of look like little packing beads or something like that, or the kind of beads like in silica gel pouches. That's about the size of them and about the shape. And then they move into a minus 40 degree Fahrenheit freezer that is like designed very specially so that it like limits heat exchange significantly. And then it goes through quality check, and then the ice cream goes into these cute little pouches. Or what? Well, yeah, they're kind of pouches. They're little like, yeah, they are pouches. You kind of like can squeeze them out. And that's when they're shipped. So we've talked about this in the past too, just the idea of like medical packaging. It's a very specialized field. Like there's all kinds of interesting innovations that have to go into packaging for pharmaceuticals that wouldn't go into packaging for any other kind of consumable product. So Pfizer already has somewhat of a system where they use these pizza trays, they call them, that they used for shipping doses of the vaccine. Each one of them gets loaded up with 195 vials of the frozen vaccine. And this is coming from Julie Swan, who's a health systems expert at North Carolina State University. So apparently a minimum order is 1,000 doses. So that's like how they're kind of bundled up. So the goal is to vaccinate as many people as humanly possible and send not have any doses go to waste. So she had this to say in the PopSci article, quote, they probably designed it with the idea that someone would take out an entire tray at a time. And for a mass vaccination clinic, that's great. It's harder when we're trying to vaccinate priority populations and they're all spread out. So enter Dippin' Dots to kind of help them learn how to solve this problem. They're still going to use the pizza trays, and the, chief development officer for Dippin' Dots, a guy named Stan Jones, talks about in the article how they, you know, were able to kind of bring this process to a massive, massive scale. Like I said, shipping around 100 million servings across the entire planet. So he is now working directly with folks from Pfizer and figuring out how they can integrate this technology into distributing the vaccine. And I think that's delightful. It's really interesting how what I would consider sort of a goofy novelty ice cream thing that I very rarely think of has this technology that's like borderline proprietary that no one else has quite cracked. I mean, I'm sure there are other like, you know, very low temperature free. It's not like they are the only ones that know how to like get temperatures this low, but they have it built into this incredible supply chain. And I just think it's a really interesting example of like teamwork kind of. I don't know, at the very least. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it's really cool. I kind of just want them to go all the way to have Pfizer, you know, really, truly get together with Dippin' Dots and get those carts just full of vaccines and just roll around, you know, just every city vaccinating everybody.
Yeah,
that's not scary.
Well, because we were a little bit naive in our previous estimations about COVID-19 corruption and counterfeiting and people jumping the proverbial line. It turns out that things have been bungled so profoundly that vaccines are expiring and going right. bad. Right, so right. Dippin' Dots could really hop in and help out here. I also think it's funny. I enjoy this. Time is so funny. I don't know who will remember this, but years back, it emerged that one of the press secretaries of the current administration, you know, there were tons of these over the past 4 years. They kept getting fired.
Talking about Spicer?
A guy named Sean Spicer had a ongoing, very odd, maybe not totally serious feud with Dippin' Dots. Way back on April 8th, 2010, he wrote, "Dippin' Dots is capital, not the ice cream of the future." And he continued like finding reasons to talk trash about Dippin' Dots. As Michael Scott said in The Office, "How the turntables, Scott. How do you like those dots now?" Yeah. I always felt people were unfair to Dippin' Dots. I immensely enjoy the novelty. I don't think there's anything wrong with enjoying a shape of a dessert or a treat. If you like fruit by the foot or you prefer Fruit Loops, then Godspeed and more power to you. This also, I do hope that this goes better than the ill-fated Kodak vaccine assistance, because a while back in the early days of the what history will call the first pandemic of this decade, a while back, our government gave a $765 million loan to Kodak with the idea that they would be able to use some of their chemical know-how to produce critical ingredients for COVID-19 treatments. That turned out not to be the case, but Dippin' Dots is already using technology that they have. They've established it. It's right. reliable. It's reproducible. It's scalable. So good on you, Dippin' Dots. I look forward to this.
I completely agree. It is very good on Dippin' Dots. There are a few little wrinkles, one of which is that these freezers, they are really only looking to be leased because, you know, once the vaccine cycle is over, I mean, the government or Pfizer or whomever doesn't want to have like a gazillion of these super low temperature freezers that they're stuck with and don't know what to do with. Also, according to Jones from Dippin' Dots, you can't really return them back to production in terms of like putting foodstuffs back in them once you've stored these medical supplies in them. So it's a little bit tricky. There's also the issue of paying for it, right? Because these vaccines are going to be free. And they're going to be distributed and the money has to come from somewhere. So, you know, I mean, like Dippin' Dots obviously wants to help, but they can't sacrifice their entire fleet of freezers and go under without some compensation. So it's ultimately going to be passed on somewhere, whether it's in the loss of other programs or however that money is going to get soaked up. But really interesting story and one that I'm surprised hasn't been a little bit more top of mind for folks. This is from a week or so ago, and I haven't heard any like new details as to what are they doing? Are they moving forward with it? Because I know that the rollout has been pretty troubled, so maybe they haven't quite gotten to this step yet. But it'll be interesting to see if Dippin' Dots does end up being the hero that we all maybe we didn't know we needed, but we definitely deserve. I don't know if I'm getting dessert. Okay, I'm done.
There it is. You know, this is brilliant. I wonder how many times the trademarked name Dippin' Dots has been said on air across the news over the past couple of days.
Oh, yeah, good point.
That's a good point. It's a good point.
It's great. I mean, how many times has it been said in today's show?
Well, it's fun to say. I mean, I'm not going to Dippin' Dots, Dippin' Dots, Dippin' Dots. It's fun.
Did you guys see the recent video that came out with about Velcro, the brand name Velcro?
Mm-mm.
There is a fantastic video you can find online of, I believe they are patent attorneys, or maybe they're just attorneys who, you know, control the patent of Velcro, a trademarked name.
Ah, the Velcro registered trademark.
Okay. Well, and it's about how if we as, you know, humanity continue to refer to the hook, what is it, hook and loop mm-hmm. technology as Velcro, they will lose their patent. They'll lose their trademarked patent, because it would then just be a generic thing. Velcro would be the generic name. They can no longer make billions of dollars or whatever on that trademark with all these other companies using the technology. I don't know. It's just, it reminds me of this.
What you're talking about is what's sometimes called a proprietary eponym or a genericized trademark. Like when people, often people in the West say Google when they mean internet search, or Xerox when they mean to make a copy.
Or Coke when they mean a soda.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. That's a good example too. So it might be a situation where not too long from now, people say they got the Dippin' Dot and they're referring to the little mark of the injection point of their vaccine. You know what I mean?
I have to say that's a really good point, Ben, but I do think it's funny that like since 1988, no one else has tried to copy Dippin' Dots in terms of
They have.
Really?
There was like Mini, there was a company, oh my God, it was a long time ago, Mini something.
Dunkin' Dabs. They're a specific type of thing made by Dunkin' Donuts, available only in California and Colorado.
Holy cow, I just Googled it, and there's a page on Reddit called Crappy Off Brands, and one of them is called Itsy Bits.
There you go.
Little bits. There's different ones. Yeah, but okay. To be fair, still not ubiquitously, not with great success, let us say. Because I've always thought of Dippin' Dots as pretty niche, but 100 million servings a year, that's pretty high.
Well, yeah. And then also, what's a serving? Because are they cooking the books? Because one dot is not a serving.
That's a good point.
I don't mean to sound like a glutton here, but you got to get at least a cup. I didn't know this, but you know, another example of proprietary eponyms would be dumpster. Dumpster is a brand name, you guys.
Well, or porta potty. I bet porta potty is a brand as well. I almost guarantee.
Mm. Yeah, like the real name for dumpster, it was like a patented thing made by some people called the Dempster Brothers back in 1936. We're supposed to call them mobile garbage bins. So everybody listening to the show, be cool. Don't get the rest of us sued. It's a mobile garbage bin if you're around a narc.
When you get a cut put on a plaster, let's go the UK way there. Well, what? When you need bleach, use bleach. Isn't that's an okay thing to say? Don't call it the C word.
It's tissue, not a Kleenex. Itty bits. Itsy bits.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Please. I don't want to be that way. If you use these words as just regular terminology, then some big company doesn't make a ton of money.
Just to confirm, Porta Potty is a brand. The official name for that is Chemical Toilet.
Oh, sexy, sexy. That's also the name of a band Max starts and Always Sunny.
You're absolutely right. Oh my God. We learned so much today.
I've got, one anecdote that might be interesting to the longtime How Stuff Works people. Back in the day, several of us did a show called Stuff of Genius, and we actually ran into something like this. I can't remember if we tried to do this with Dippin' Dots, but we ran into legal issues with things that you would think were very innocuous, like Frisbee and trampoline in particular. You have to call them the flying disc, and I think we couldn't even make the trampoline episode. Yeah. Hopefully whatever statute of online videos has passed now that we could say that. But good on you, Dippin' Dots. That's awesome. Thank you for bringing some light to the end of this dark segment.
And then one last thing in this Reddit page, Crappy Off Brands, there's a whole segment on Dippin' Dots and Itsy Bits, and someone jokes that Itsy Bits tagline should be the ice cream of the time that happens after now.
That's fantastic. The ice cream of the time that happens after now.
It's not quite as sexy as the ice cream of the future, but hopefully Sean Spicer would approve. But yeah, that was fun, you guys. I'm glad we got to end on a little bit of is this etymology? I don't know, kind of, not really, more like brandomology, but a good time just the same.
Mm-hmm. And we hope you enjoyed this as well. Thank you, as always, to everybody who is tuning in. We want to hear from you. Are Dippin' Dots the ice cream of the future? Where do you stand? Let us know. What do you think is actually happening over in Iran? What are the ulterior motives? And of course, we want to hear from you, whatever your neck of the global woods is. We particularly like to hear from our listeners who have lived in Iran or are there now. And of course, also Assange. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think he will manage to stay in the United Kingdom. Do you think you will ever see Australia again? Do you think he wants to? We'd like to hear from you. We try to make it easy to find us here on the internets. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We particularly like to recommend the number one page on all of the internet, other than the Dippin' Dots homepage. That is Here's Where It Gets Crazy, with the best mods in the business. Find us there. Find the best part of the show, your fellow listeners. If you hate social media, we've got a couple other ways you can talk to us.
Yeah, you can call us. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. Hey, it was the holidays recently, and I just want to put out my heartfelt apologies to everyone that got a phone call from me after a couple of beers in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. sorry for making your probably evening awkward while you're hanging out at your parents' house.
You probably made their freaking Christmas, dude.
Yeah, that's great. Sorry.
No more self-deprecation.
They probably feel bad because they didn't get you a gift. You know what I mean? But that's great. People, you do need to know those 3 minutes, they do belong to you. They're yours to do with as you will. There is a non-zero chance, in the technical parlance, there's a non-zero chance that you may get a call back. Because remember, when you stare deeply into the abyss, sometimes the abyss rings you, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that abyss's name is Matthew Frederick.
Oh, or other people.
That is
exactly
what it's like.
We don't know.
But what if you hate the phone?
Well, hold the phone, or don't, because you hate the phone and you probably don't want to touch it. You can use the internet in another slightly older school way. You can send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.